12-episode Hierarchy of Spirits. Each of the disciples of the Keeper of Knowledge had their own path that led them to him. Some were so shaken by fate that they earnestly sought understanding of what was happening to them. Others possessed innate sensitivity and felt the influence of the non-material part of the cosmos, but couldn't find any explanations. Some experienced significant emotional trauma, where there was no distinction between a genuine tragedy and the turmoil caused by an overactive imagination. The sufferings varied, but ignorance was the root cause, and eliminating it was the most important mission of the Keeper of Knowledge. Among the disciples were those who wholeheartedly aspired to the higher, guided by a mature soul, free from other inclinations. Conversations with the sage and the desire to apply the acquired knowledge united people of different social statuses, ages, and destinies into a strong spiritual family, ready to help each one, regardless of what triggered the desire for self-improvement. Today, the Keeper of Knowledge chose a wide clearing at the foot of a majestic mountain range as the place for a conversation with his disciples, offering a view of a charming waterfall forming a small mountain lake. The rocks before them were magnificent in their splendor. It seemed as if the spirit of the planet expressed its aspirations by raising huge stone masses towards the clouds. However, soon all the attention of the disciples turned to barely noticeable bas-reliefs, faces of saints carved in the rocks from which streams of pure mountain water flowed. Serene and wise, the faces of the saints seemed to call out to the essence of those gathered, seeking to convey knowledge that was impossible to interpret without the Master's guidance. The disciples of the Keeper of Knowledge, full of sublime emotions, eagerly awaited wise guidance. The topic of today's conversation was about the spirits and how to communicate with them. This topic concerned each disciple, and all of them, regardless of their nature, preferred to remain silent until the Master arrived. Spirits were always with the disciples, but now they realized that they knew nothing about them. All their communication with them amounted to requests for help. When the sage appeared in the clearing, his disciples' faces lit up with joy, a feeling they experienced every time they met their master. The long familiar emotion never ceased to feel new, and conversations with the master, seemed profound, thus to transcend the physical world, undisturbed by the routine flow of time. In these mountain ranges, harboring the carved memories of saints amidst snow and waterfalls, the disciples felt the close proximity of the spirits more than ever. The thought that today the sage would teach how to communicate with them heightened their inner excitement and reverence. The Keeper of Knowledge immediately noticed a very young disciple struggling with shyness, sitting at the edge of the clearing. A gentle nod and a smile from the sage, full of love and acceptance, inspired the girl, and she began the conversation.
Dear Master, I acknowledge that I feed the spirits and seek their help when things are relatively calm. But when I'm in a hurry, the most I can do is throw an offering out of the window.
The girl lowered her emerald green eyes as she spoke, still ashamed of her lifestyle.
But it's such a rudeness and arrogance to ask the spirits for help without finding time for them. What should we do in extreme situations? To pray or to rush?
You've forgotten the most important thing, Sandra.
The sage's remark didn't hurt the girl, as his lips curled into a smile, and his voice carried paternal care.
It's not about time, but the intensity of the emotions with which we address the spirits. It doesn't matter if we do it on the run or sitting. If we address the spirits with very strong emotions, they will surely hear and help us. But if a person is in a senseless state without emotions, they can address the spirits for 24 hours and never get any answer. Powerful emotions attract all spirits in seconds.
These words astonished the disciples of the Keeper of Knowledge. Once again, they realized that they were overlooking one of the most important aspects of their lives. The subtle world did not obey the laws of physics, and always excretes or alongside Safhi prozin niing nimim. To live a day without experiencing a single sublime emotion meant leading a life akin to a worm's, repulsive and corrupt, and now, gathered amidst the snow and waterfalls of these mountains, the disciples rejoiced in the overflowing emotions, welcoming and trying to prolong them as much as possible. In the hearts of the disciples, a vivid sense of unity with the entire world arose, and the opportunity to communicate with the spirits and seek their support and assistance only intensified their interest and readiness to interact with the subtle, invisible world of spirits.
And how do we feel that the spirits are responding to us?
The Master's explanation filled Sandra with hope, and her voice now carried hope and inspiration, replacing the earlier shame.
An unusual state comes to us immediately. That is the spirit's response,
the Keeper of Knowledge replied.
This state often contains a message, and with it comes an understanding of what to do, how to react. If we ask a question, the answer or guidance comes to it. This is how the spirits respond to us.
Hearing these words, many disciples were inspired, recalling their experiences of communicating with the spirits and the help they received.
Great one, we feed various spirits and deities, but we never feed the spirit of the egregore. Should we do that?
Asked a tall, dark-haired man, whose eastern appearance strangely combined with brightly blue eyes.
Or does it happen differently, through our involvement or service?
Emotions are the most important. They are the best sacrifice we can offer,
the sage replied.
Involvement and service are also worthy sacrifices, but only when a person experiences sublime emotions. If you only formally address the spirits, it won't bring anything.
Master, am I correct in understanding that we need to constantly cultivate some emotion and consistently offer this sacrifice?
Asked another man.
Or is it better to start with something simple? Being in a meditative state and observing what happens inside. Which way should we go? Constantly focus on cultivating emotion, or just start by continuously observing ourselves?
You correctly observed, Kamal, that cultivating emotions requires significant energy expenditure.
The Keeper of Knowledge smiled at him.
Energy is needed, and it's not always enough to cultivate sublime emotions throughout the day. So when there's no energy, we simply observe ourselves, become aware, see the processes happening within. This doesn't require much effort. And when the energy appears, we start cultivating sublime emotions again. But we don't stop observing ourselves.
Master, what can be considered a sacrifice? In the past, for example, animals were sacrificed. Was it just a human invention? Or did the spirits really need such a sacrifice?
Joined the conversation a slender red-haired woman with expressive green eyes and a sprinkling of freckles on her cheeks.
In the past, people had nothing but livestock, Teresa.
The sage continued to explain.
A person's prosperity was measured by the herd they kept, because there were no other values in herding tribes. People settled their accounts with each other using meat, wool, and other livestock products, which then replaced even money. Therefore, livestock, as the primary property, was offered as a sacrifice to the spirits. This way, a person freed up a portion of prosperity and asked for something else in return. Traditionally, after the sacrifice, the shamanic community gathered together to eat the meat of the animals offered to the spirits. Then, the hides of these animals were hung in the direction of the spirit they were addressing. It was believed that the soul of this livestock went to serve that spirit. Another reason for sacrificing livestock was dark spirits. They also needed to feed on something, so they would start attacking people, causing diseases, or instigating conflicts between tribes to unleash fights or even wars. So to prevent the spirits from causing trouble, livestock was offered as a sacrifice. In this way, they were satiated by the spilled blood and satisfied, dispersed for some time. There was also a third way of sacrificing livestock, which was symbolically. Usually such a sacrifice was intended for Ulgun or Tengri. If it was a deer or a horse, it wasn't harnessed or ridden. If it was a sheep, its wool was not sheared, and it was not slaughtered. It was believed that such animals belonged to a specific spirit or deity, and although they grazed with other animals, they no longer served humans. A beautiful and majestic white animal was usually chosen for Ulgun or Tengri, while a black, unattractive one with defects was chosen for Erlik. For him, as a dark spirit, the sacrifice was no longer symbolic. The animal destined for him was killed. When agriculture replaced herding, such sacrifices receded to a background, but the essence of the sacrifice remained the same, cleansing the volume of prosperity to obtain something in return.
Master, does it mean that any sacrifice is selfish in any case? I bring it to receive something in return. Can there be a sacrifice that is not selfish? And is there any point in such a sacrifice if I ask for nothing in return?
Teresa asked another question. Sensitive and exalted by nature, Teresa sought to rid herself of imaginary prosperity, and at the same time, avoid becoming a mad recluse, whose asceticism only reinforced her selfishness. Now, the girl's face clearly expressed excitement, which was calmed by the certainty that the sage was guiding her on the right path.
If we ask for nothing in return, we begin to grow spiritually. We sacrifice our lies, negative emotions, and identification for our spiritual development,
the Keeper of Knowledge replied.
Such a sacrifice is already made to the higher spirits, who are called to help us on this path. It's no longer about cleansing the volume of prosperity as an attempt to obtain something lacking, such as many material things or social goods like fame and status. A sacrifice without a request is already connected not with getting something or even helping someone. As for a person, we also have to sacrifice something for them to recover, for example. But without a request, we sacrifice for our development. We sacrificed our lives. And here come the bright spirits to help us develop and grow. So it's not a material sacrifice, and the rewards of such a sacrifice are also not material, but spiritual. Selflessly sacrificing for development, a person acquires the timeless treasures of their soul.
Master, is there a connection between learning to ask for help in life and addressing the spirits? It's not always easy, even with ordinary people. So, how should we correctly ask the spirits?
Sandra asked.
Many of them are just like people. We need to find an approach to them. Do they also appreciate a smile and attention?
Upon hearing these words, a joyful smile lit up the girl's face. Without uttering a word, just by looking at the teacher, she understood that her suspicions were correct. Sandra had long become a disciple of the Keeper of Knowledge, and despite the seemingly inexhaustible wisdom he shared, she knew that she could comprehend it all as long as she stayed on the path.
Yes, Sandra, just like in life, we need to ask the spirits with positive emotions. If we ask in this way, there's a greater chance of receiving something from them,
the sage explained.
So we ask the spirits with positive emotions. If the emotions are strong, help will come immediately. People were taught from childhood not to ask for anything. Don't ask this man for ice cream or anything else. We have everything ourselves. Don't bother this woman. Don't ask her for anything. So we were taught not to ask for anything, but were punished. If a child tried to ask for something from someone, it was forbidden. They were told that it couldn't be done, and so on. That's why people grew up restrained, with complexes, oppressed, afraid even to ask what time it is. Therefore, a person must become more liberated, freer, and start asking, if needed, with the right emotions. Then both people and spirits will help.
Great one. During one of the darshans, you mentioned that when we turn to God, he doesn't always hear us.
Kamal returned to the conversation.
Instead, spirits of a certain level hear us. So is it worth turning to God? Or is it better to address the spirits directly? For example, if I'm doing something and I need to pray, who should I turn to? God or the spirits?
People were made to believe that spirits don't exist, so they started turning only to God.
The keeper of knowledge reminded his disciples of the worldly foolishness once again.
But in reality, simple appeals don't reach God because they can't leave the level they operate on. Requests for material things, well-being, health, etc., don't reach God. Such requests operate at the vital level and therefore only reach the vital spirits. However, if the prayer is accompanied by sublime emotions, it reaches higher spirits, the angels and archangels. Prayers for the highest, requests for merging with him, reach God. A prayer like, I want to merge with God, want to dissolve in him, can indeed reach the true God, because we cannot dissolve into angels.
The introduction to the new truth made the audience wonder. How is it that the Almighty God doesn't hear them? Is God turning away from them? What's the purpose of all these spirits? Understanding the confusion of his disciples, the Keeper of Knowledge sent them energy support and acceptance, continuing to explain.
Imagine workers in a factory writing a request to the director, asking for some tool.
The sage resorted to a simple comparison to explain one of the basics of existence.
It's not the director who fulfills their request, but the warehouse manager. He issues the necessary tools. Other issues are also solved by some minor supervisor, not the factory director. Similarly, with our appeals to God, all our requests are distributed among the spirits, and each one goes to the spirit that will help us. Currently, there's monotheism, asserting that spirits don't exist, and there are no other gods, that there's only one God, and that's why everyone started turning to him. But in reality, our prayers are distributed. Only requests for unity reach God. And everything else from prayers for health to various minor desires is fulfilled by helper spirits.
Master, then who are the saints? I heard that Christianity is accused of insincerity because they say God is one, but you can and should pray to saints. Maybe saints are also spirits?
A very young-looking girl of Asian descent asked. She came to the Keeper of Knowledge from South Korea, where both Christianity and Buddhism were prevalent, and therefore, the girl still had doubts about the correct path. The only thing she was now sure of was that without the guidance of a true master, she would only get more confused.
You think absolutely correctly, Ji Yon.
The sage smiled.
In Christianity, instead of polytheism, there is a multitude of saints. A person prays, for example, to Saint Nicholas, and he helps. Despite the denial of spirits and other gods in Christianity, the understanding that saints also help and that they should be addressed is present.
So, saints are also spirits?
Ji Yon asked another question. The girl felt how her doubts were leaving her. Ji Yon's gaze clarified without losing attentiveness, and a gentle smile touched her lips.
Yes. Saints have left their physical shell and became spirits,
confirmed the Keeper of Knowledge.
In the world of spirits, everyone is arranged hierarchically. A saintly person rises to a high level among angels. An ordinary person, upon entering the realm of spirits, is already at a lower level. There are also lower spirits, and at the very bottom, various larvae and demons. This is how the hierarchy of spirits looks like. The higher the spirit, the higher the level it occupies, and vice versa. The lower, the closer to various larvae. If a person contemplates wrongdoing, planning to rob or kill someone, dark spirits and demons will assist them. Sometimes they even instill thoughts of committing evil deeds, intoxicate the person, and lead them into the swamp.
Master, how do spirits ascend the hierarchy? And how is it maintained? For instance, if a person is reborn and becomes an angel, a helper, is it possible that when we absolve the sins of the deceased and cleanse karma, they ascend the hierarchical steps in the world of spirits?
Sandra asked another question.
I'm very concerned about the fates of my deceased relatives and acquaintances. Can I help them with prayer?
Yes, you can help them significantly,
replied the sage.
In the world of spirits, there is the same kind of growth as here. So when we pray for someone, we can assist them by providing subtle energy, guiding them, and helping them progress and develop. Let's recall Jan now. When he first entered the subtle level, he initially manifested as selfish, just as he was on Earth. However, Jan began to reflect on his behavior and made a conscious decision to change. When he started helping people, fighting against larvae, providing guidance, his ascent in the world of spirits began. By that time, Kajur had reached a certain level and had risen higher, transitioning to the angels.
Master, to which hierarchy does Allah belong? He's also a spirit, right?
Kamal asked with excitement in his voice.
I always thought of him as the one God, but I soon realized that there are contradictions in Islam regarding this. And it seems like God is somewhat separated from us.
Allah is represented as the spirit of the egregore, just like Yahweh.
The keeper of knowledge began to explain.
Here it's the same story as with Christianity. Allah is the one God, and believing in other gods is not allowed. But by saying this, it is asserted that there are some other gods. Similarly, the Bible says that a person should have no other gods and should worship only Yahweh. But this can also be interpreted as the existence of other gods, since they claim that there are other gods. What kind of one God do they have? A God who is in everything, in all other gods, in people, in all things. That is the one God. However, in Christianity and Islam, not only the so-called one God is acknowledged, but also other gods, to whom one should not worship or serve.
Yes, I understand now,
contemplatively uttered Kamal.
And in many religions, there is also the devil. It turns out he is like a god, too. Like God created him, but at the same time, the devil has such power that he can plunge the whole world into chaos.
Yes, that's another inconsistency,
nodded the sage.
If there's Satan, it means such a god is not universal, not one. The one god encompasses everything, both Satan, demons, and larvae. Everything is a part of him. If God is divided and Satan exists separately, or for example, if Ulgin and Erlik are divided, then it's no longer the one God, but just a part, a small God, a part of the whole. Or for example, there is God and the world. It means that God exists separately, and the world exists separately, and the devil exists separately from the small God. Such a partial God is the spirit of the egregore or some planetary spirit, for example, the spirit of the earth or the spirit of Jupiter. And when people pray to, let's say, Zeus, they are seeking help from a planetary spirit, Jupiter, or this planet. Or if they pray to the sun, for instance, the sun is also a god for many people. So most people in their prayers are not turning to the Almighty God. If we pray to the Almighty God, we must understand that he is in everything. In demons, larvae, in all good and bad people, in all other things, in the entire world, and in ourselves. These are all parts of the Almighty God. He encompasses absolutely everything, and there is nothing that is not him. When a person addresses God with this understanding, then they are turning to the Almighty.
Now I understand that our God is universal and one, and it completely changes the perception.
Ji-yeon spoke, and her face lit up with a smile again.
If the devil is also a part of God, then what's the use of praying to one to be delivered from the other? God gives with one hand and takes away with the other. It turns out our life is such a big game, where we are a part of God along with other things.
Exactly,
confirmed the sage, agreeing with his disciples' words.
In Christianity and Islam, however, there is no such view. God is small because the world exists separately from him, and all people live separately from him, and Satan is constantly interfering. The devil is separate. Angels of darkness and shadows exist somewhere separately. Such a limited God is simply the spirit of the egregore. Prayers to such a God form a single religious egregore. It gets pumped with emotions. People turn to it. And mainly, it reaches the spirit of the egregore. Where polytheism is practiced, people turn to planetary spirits, to Jupiter, to Mars, to Venus, etc. In other words, they pray to planetary spirits, which also have an impact and help. Therefore, we should study any religion, how it is structured, how they envision God, and then we will immediately see what is what. What kind of God do they have? Is it the spirit of the egregore, a planetary spirit, or indeed the Almighty, who encompasses absolutely everything?
Master, in my homeland, India, the cow is considered a sacred animal,
said the petite, dark-eyed brunette, nervously playing with her thick braid. Overwhelmed by the sage's attention, Pamati couldn't finish her question. But the sage grasped the essence.
In almost all beliefs, sacred animals are present. For some, it's a cow. For others, a deer, a cat, or even a bird.
The keeper of knowledge began explaining with a smile.
They are often associated with a deity. Sometimes it is the deity's mount or a faithful companion, like a dog. There are also animals connected to the totem of the lineage. A specific animal is chosen as the totem, considered inviolable in hunting and consumption. It is to be protected in every way because it guards the lineage. Therefore, divine and totemic animals are considered more sacred than others, which can be eaten or used as working cattle. So the cow in India is just one example of many sacred animals.
The approving and gentle look from the master dissolved all of Bhamati's hesitation, and encouraged by the sage's response, she spoke hastily, fearing to miss another chance.
Master, does the strength of the spirit of the egregore depend on how actively its participants serve it? Or, on the contrary, does the spirit itself possess some inherent power that it distributes to all participants in the egregore? Or perhaps, do both sides work?
It is connected with the participants. It all depends on emotions. The more emotions among the participants, the stronger the egregore becomes,
explained the sage.
This emotional energy accumulates from prayers, appeals, and thoughts. For example, when a person starts doing some egregore work, serving it in a specific way, the power accumulated by the egregore begins to flow towards them. The person feels as if they've grown wings, gained a lot of energy, as if something is guiding them. This energy flows to them, not because they decided to pursue some selfish actions, take something for themselves, or harm someone. It flows because this person serves the egregore, performs some egregore work, and then this power is given to them.
Master, there are people who worship dark powers, for example, Satan. At the same time, most of us are taught to view this negatively,
said a tall, fair-haired young man, his voice filled with excitement. the keeper of knowledge understood without words that this topic was personal for his disciple and had long been troubling him.
What actually guides these people, and how should we approach this? Do dark powers really help them?
What you are asking about is nothing more than foolish rebellion, protest for the sake of protest,
reassured the sage.
But there is another side to worshipping dark powers. In ancient times, for example, people worshipped Erlik or Shiva, the god of destruction in India. If there is a god of creation, then there must be a god of destruction. Brahma creates, Vishnu preserves, and Shiva destroys. Orolgan creates, Umai preserves, and Erlik destroys. And when people truly worship powers of destruction, they worship Erlik. For example, if a person wants to quit smoking, they turn us to Erlik to free them from this harmful habit. Take away my habit of smoking, overeating, laziness. Take away some of my lies, negative emotions, identifications. That's what you should ask Erlik for. The same goes for Shiva. He also takes away the negative and helps in development. However, Satanism is not the worship of Erlik or Shiva. It's simply anti-Christianity, a desire to go against the grain, out of spite. Instead of Christ, there's the Antichrist, instead of the Virgin Mary. A harlot, prayers are recited backward, and sacred sites are defiled. Satanists just pervert everything in Christianity, doing the opposite. So it's just a foolish protest movement.
Yes, now I understand what's going on in my brother's mind,
sighed the youth.
He does everything to spite our mother, who is very religious. My brother twists everything upside down just to oppose her, knowing about all the Christian rituals and sanctities as well as she does.
Exactly, Ingvar. Modern Satanism is based precisely on opposition to Christianity,
nodded the Keeper of Knowledge.
However, genuine worship of the devil involves worshipping Erlik or Shiva, in other words, gods of destruction. There were ancient cults associated with Erlik, Shiva, and other gods of destruction, and these cults were correct because they were not, for example, a protest against Ulgen. They understood that if there is Ulgen, there is also Erlik, meaning Brahma exists, so does Shiva. In other words, from such a holistic worldview, a cult of the devil emerged, and its followers knew that to get rid of something, you need to sacrifice to Erlik in advance, or to appease the evil spirits so that they wouldn't harm people. Sacrifices had to be made in advance. For example, cattle, so that these spirits would leave people alone. In ancient devil worship cults, it was a reasonable action stemming from an understanding of the situation. But modern Satanism is just a foolish, stubborn protest, reaching the point of wanting to spoil and defile sanctuaries, and it lacks requests for deliverance. There is true worship of gods of destruction, proper interaction with them, so that they, too, help annihilate something. And there is this foolish punk movement within Christianity, now called Satanism.
Master, there are different spirits, different deities, such as Umai, the goddess Lakshmi, and Brahma, etc. Am I correct in understanding that there are different types of energy? And when we tune into Umai, we are tuning into that specific energy? Does each type of energy have its own name in different cultures?
Voiced Sandra. Her new question.
There are indeed different types of energy coming from different planets,
replied the sage.
For example, in one culture, the same deity might be called Perun, while in another Zeus, and somewhere else, Indra. In reality, it is the same planet Jupiter, just called by different names in different cultures, and it is associated with the same thunder god. In different cultures, God and the planet are named differently, but in fact, they refer to the same phenomenon, that is, the influence of Jupiter.
Master, how should we interact with spirits?
Returned Ji Yeon to the conversation.
Should we address spirits in general, or should we build specific relationships, tame one of the spirits, constantly communicate with it? Is such a possibility available? And do people have assigned helper spirits?
Yes, we must have relationships with spirits,
affirmed the Keeper of Knowledge.
Suppose we hear about a certain god. Let it be Quetzalcoatl. We learn that there is such a god, but we don't understand who he is. We decide to pray to him, just like that, without emotional connection, and nothing comes out of it. That's because we don't even have an idea about this god. There is no emotional connection with him. Therefore, we cannot address him properly. But for example, we know Christ well from childhood. He is talked about all the time, and we have some idea of him. Intrigued, we watched a film about Christ and read the gospel. So we have a concept of Christ, and it's easy for us to turn to him because we already have feelings, emotions, and thoughts about him. A relationship is already established. Thanks to these relationships, the Spirit of Christ will indeed help us. But Quetzalcoatl, we don't even know how to imagine. We have no emotions, no thoughts about him, no image, and we cannot address him properly. So how will he help us? Therefore, the key when dealing with spirits and deities is strong relationships. Without that, our requests will remain unanswered.
Beloved Master, what connection do we have with deceased relatives?
Asked the Indian woman with a new question.
After all, they don't leave us, right? I feel that my grandmother's spirit is with me. She loved me so much, I can't believe she would leave me.
Your feelings do not deceive you, Pamati,
reassured the sage.
Our strongest connection is indeed with deceased relatives. After them, we are connected to the guardian angel assigned to each of us by higher powers, although we may not even be aware of it. Then come egregores, with which each person already has a connection because they are inevitably part of some egregore. A person may be in a Christian egregore, an Islamic one, Shinto, or completely abandon religion and engage in an ideological egregore. There is undoubtedly a connection with some egregore, even if the person is unaware, an unconscious contact is established. Often a person does not understand that this connection exists, and that in fact, they are a conductor of certain egregore powers. Perhaps a family egregore has enslaved him, and he serves and worships it. This egregore begins to move him in different directions. Or a communist egregore, someone believed strongly in this ideology and connected to the communist egregore. Someone believed in fascism and was connected to the fascist egregore. That is, different egregores influence us, and we may not understand it, but they are already leading us somewhere. Therefore, the most crucial thing for us is to realize which subtle level powers are connected with us. If we start analyzing, we will see many larvae with various demonic entities, our guardian angel, the spirits of the deceased, planetary influences, and the egregores in which we exist.
All the disciples of the Keeper of Knowledge listened to him, filled with emotions from the realization that serving egregores was inherent in all people on Earth. Some felt annoyed that their loved ones were enslaved by an ideological egregore, while others rejoiced that even the most lost soul had a guardian angel who could help. Some were aware that their connection with a fool egregore still persisted.
Then a person begins to realize that the egregore he involuntarily served is actually alien to him,
continued the master.
At some point he joined the Communist Party, started serving the communist egregore, and then thought, why do I need all this? Where did this egregore lead me? To war, to the construction of communism, to camps. The person desired spiritual development and began searching for higher egregores that would help him become better, understand life, and comprehend everything. I want to connect with such an egregore deliberately. I will deliberately direct my emotions there, pray. Actively maintain contact with it because this egregore helps me. But I don't want to serve other egregores that destroy me, make me foolish for their own purposes. I don't want to serve them, thinks the conscious person. If we ourselves begin to choose which influence to fall under and which to avoid, then we begin to control our own lives. But if a person, like a zombie, does not understand what influences him, where he is led, which powers guide him, he becomes part of the crowd, like a puppet tossed in different directions, fulfilling the desires of lower spirits and egregores, and then becomes their victim.
Dear Master, you mentioned that there is worship of Ehrlich, and there is Antichrist. Essentially, just the opposite action.
Asked Sandra.
When we are fighting against dark powers, who are we fighting against? The larvae sent by Ehrlich. At the same time, we worship Ehrlich, show respect to him through rituals. Why then do we stand against dark powers?
Of course, when larvae start devouring us, we must resist, not let the dark powers take control over us,
began the sage to explain.
Ehrlich sends larvae to go into the world and cause destruction. That's why we turn to him with a request not to do that. Try to appease him, perform rituals, so that he doesn't send too many larvae to us and gives us a chance to improve and cleanse our karma before irreversible events occur. Sometimes larvae themselves, without his knowledge, start attacking. Then we ask Ehrlich to deal with them and drive them away.
Master, what should we do if Ehrlich asks for blood during prayer? If we sacrifice some animal, is it considered a sin?
Asked the girl with a new question.
Ehrlich does not necessarily ask for blood. A blood substitute sacrifice is enough for him. For example, to stop people from going to war.
Replied the Keeper of Knowledge.
Wars start because spirits want some kind of food. But instead of people dying in war, another sacrifice can be made. Instead of killing people, they kill livestock, creating a substitute sacrifice. And if, in our normal state, we worship Ehrlich, it is enough to ask him to take away all the bad from us, our harmful habits, our lies, negative emotions. Because we are not associated with the government or war to offer bloody sacrifices. We simply offer what hinders us, what we want to get rid of, and Ehrlich takes it away.
Master, there are people who use black magic seemingly for good, to prevent family quarrels or to stop a husband from drinking.
Teresa spoke thoughtfully.
But at the same time, they don't have any initiation. They perform rituals using black magic. Is this dangerous? How should we approach this?
Everything depends on the intent. People may ask for entirely different things,
explained the sage.
One out of selfishness asks Ehrlich to help him revenge a neighbor, causing harm to him. Another might turn to Ehrlich asking to drive away evil spirits from a sick person so that they don't devour him and he recovers. In this case, the person asks for help not out of selfishness, but out of compassion for others. Therefore, black magic is what is done out of selfishness, out of the desire to cause evil. But if some magic is done to help someone, to do something good, then turning to Ehrlich becomes positive magic.
Great one. I had a situation when I lost a very important thing and couldn't find it for a long time.
Pamati shared her story.
Then I had an inner decision that I would sacrifice some of my bad qualities. And after that, I found the thing. So, it means the spirits heard me?
Yes, the spirits indeed helped you.
confirmed the sage.
Spirits are always around us, and if we turn to them, they can help us find something. Or if we get lost in the forest, we turn to the spirits, and they help us. For example, a person gets lost in the forest and remembers being told that he should put on his clothes inside out so that the forest spirit helps him. At first, he thought it was nonsense, but hours passed, and he was hungry, cold, and under the rain, still persisting in his folly. Finally, he couldn't bear it, put on his clothes inside out, and suddenly saw a forester's hut nearby. He went inside, warmed up, and realized that spirits indeed help us. But for that, we must turn to them, perform the necessary rituals to establish a connection with them, and then help will follow.
So, changing clothes inside out is such a ritual, not just an allegory. Do the spirits need to see a person's readiness to interact?
Asked a new question Kamal. Previously, such rituals made him smile, but now he realized there was hidden meaning behind them.
You understood it correctly,
nodded the Keeper of Knowledge with a smile.
Certain rituals work. If an intelligent person knows this ritual because someone passed it on to him, he performs it, and the spirits start helping. But if a person persists, doesn't want to perform a simple ritual, then the spirits look at his stubbornness and marvel at his foolishness. Then they help him, teach him a lesson until he finally understands what rituals need to be done correctly. And then, if he does it right, the spirits start helping him.
Teacher, when I go on the missions of power, I often find myself unable to do anything on my own, and I somehow understand that it's already hopeless.
Sandra shared her concern.
There are specific invocations to the spirits that you've taught us, and thanks to which I tune in and pray, as I cannot do anything on my own. It turns out that some coincidences align and ultimately lead to good results. I've noticed that they are always connected to the assistance I receive from the spirits. The only problem is that my mind doesn't manage to recognize the actions of the spirits, as they do everything so quickly, nullify obstacles, and guide us in the right direction. Does it mean that we cannot do anything good on our own without the help of the spirits?
Of course, spirits should help. But a person can also do something on their own,
the sage corrected her.
It's just that people often are blind. They do not see, even if they want to do something good, how to do it, in which way. Understanding of their actions does not come to them. The spirits from the subtle level see everything, so they can easily guide us, suggest how to do a good deed, direct other people towards us. The subtle level gives them the ability to see what we cannot see on a physical level.
Great one. But is intention also connected with the help of spirits?
Teresa inquired.
As a seller, I encounter situations where someone created an intention, placed an order, and everything unfolds as if the universe is helping. And someone did not create an intention, and the purchase may not be found for months. So, requests and getting results are also directly related to communication with spirits. Seek support from spirits, and you get results, but rely on chance, and you may get nothing in the end.
Of course, if we create an intention, if we have some big goal, emotions are invested in it, then that's when spirits start helping,
confirmed the Keeper of Knowledge.
The entire space begins to change according to our goal. If we have no goal, no emotions invested, then naturally nothing will happen. I've already told you about telepathy. One claims to be a great telepath, asks to think of a simple number, which he will then guess. The telepath already has a vivid image in his head, a bad mark written in a diary a long time ago. The one he asked to think of a number is in an open state, thinking about what number to choose, having had no prior thoughts. Suddenly, the number 2 comes to his mind. The telepath can guess that it was the number he suggested, so a person who already has a plan starts influencing other people who are in a senseless state, with no specific goals and intentions. They are drawn to such a person and start adjusting to him because he has a goal and intention, while they do not. They inadvertently start doing what he wants because he has a strong desire that starts affecting everyone. Just like with this telepathic experiment. If we have some thought in our head, a certain number two or something else, and others have no specific thoughts, they start catching our thought, and it begins to affect them. If they have some strong thoughts of their own, goals they aspire to, it won't affect them. Therefore, it is crucial to constantly remember our goal, our task. If we remember it, then the whole universe starts adjusting to that goal, helping us. But if there is nothing in our head, then nothing will happen.
Master, how important is the factor of faith?
Teresa asked a new question.
I shared about the rain that the spirits canceled for 10 minutes, and I managed to do what was necessary before it started again. Or how I was late for a meeting because I drove to an unknown place and the person I needed was suddenly right there. It's hard to believe that spirits do it. It seems like there is a lack of faith, but there is still some inner part that believes in it strongly. So, does help and attraction from the spirits still depend on the strength of faith?
Of course, we must believe in help, because if we don't believe in the help of spirits, like the person wandering in the forest,
the sage reminded of the fool's misadventures.
He was told that if he got lost, he should put on his clothes inside out. He does not believe and thinks he'll find his way out of the forest on his own. That is, at first, he did not believe it. And only later, after he suffered and was tired, his personality began to shut down. The essence began to intensify, strengthen, and then he began to believe in help. He performed the necessary ritual, and the spirits began to help him. Because they see everything, and if a person does not believe in anything, they will not help them. But if one believes in the help of spirits, they come to their aid.
Master, if we are in the personality, it interferes and blocks many abilities and feelings of the subtle. How should we live so that the essential state becomes our natural manifestation?
Ji Yan asked, visibly upset.
Yes, you need to live naturally, in the essential state,
replied the Keeper of Knowledge, sending energy of support and boundless love to the disciple and everyone present.
But since we have been taught that there is no God and no spirits, that there is only the physical world, it becomes difficult for us to interact with spirits. Bad upbringing hinders us. Others were raised differently. For example, among shamans, they were told that the spirit world surrounds us. Everything is spiritualized. The river, the mountain, the trees. Everything is infused with life. They were brought up this way, so they turn to the spirits. Hear what the spirits say. So it all depends on upbringing. Now we must re-educate ourselves, eliminate nonsense from within us, and start educating ourselves correctly.
Great Master, I understand that I often ask more than I express gratitude.
Sandra sighed.
Sometimes I forget what I asked for and don't know how to thank the spirits correctly. On the contrary, I want to strengthen my contact with the spirits. How can I thank them properly?
The main thing is for the emotion of gratitude to arise, not just some words,
continued the sage.
In reality, words are not important at all, but the spirits always see emotions. When a person feels gratitude, even before a situation arises, expressing gratitude to the spirits, they see that this person is good, thankful in advance, and they start helping him.
Master, disciples often say that they do not feel the spirits.
Teresa shared her observation.
For example, they take amulets and do not always feel or believe in them, What happens when they ask for their help? Is it somehow different when a person feels or doesn't the spirits? Will the one asking for help receive it in these cases?
Here, what matters is not whether we feel or do not feel, but the trust. This emotion,
explained the Keeper of Knowledge.
If we have trust, knowing that the spirits exist and asking them for help, they start assisting. They see the emotions that arise in us. Faith, trust, hope. It does not matter if a person feels the spirits or not. He just needs to tune in and address them with emotions. Then he will receive help. Often a person does not feel because he is not emotionally engaged. He just takes an object he does not understand. But if he emotionally tunes into the object, he would feel something. Telepathy is embedded in the emotional center. Therefore, if a person is emotionally tuned in, he begins to feel spirits. If he has no emotions, he just tries to feel something on the physical level. Then he finds nothing.
Master, I am familiar with the opposite story.
Sandra returned to the conversation.
One disciple wrote that when she took the object of power in her hands, as if some missing puzzle piece in her energy system fell into place, and she felt complete. How did that happen?
It means she already felt the energy,
clarified the sage.
And if a person feels energy, it means that they can already perceive objects that emit it. He begins to feel what specific energy they contain. But for this, one needs to be in the essential state. As long as we are in the personality state, in the foolish upbringing we received, we feel nothing. In childhood, they did not tell us to point to a table in the kitchen and try to feel its energy, try to see its aura and the colors it is represented in. We were not taught that in childhood, and we formed the notion that a person feels and sees nothing. If we were taught to tune into subtle perception, we would see everything right away. We have to re-educate ourselves, turn off the personality, and enter the essential state, trying to feel and see everything differently.
Master, I have encountered the belief that the totem is stronger than the spirit. Is this true?
Ji Yan now asked the question.
The totem is just a type of spirit,
replied the sage.
There are spirits of totems. There's a totem of a person who helps him. There is some animal close to him. And that animal also has a totem. There is also the totem of a tribe, the totem of a lineage. But these are just spirits that people tune into and who patronize them. The biggest spirits, closer to God, are, for example, the spirits of planets. They are already semi-gods, at a higher level than the spirits of totems, which are connected with people.
Master, there is a notion that spirits do not help until you ask them for it. Is this true, and is there some meaning in it?
Ingvar asked.
Yes, first of all, we must ask for help,
nodded the Keeper of Knowledge.
But some spirits, like guardian angels, try to help even when a person doesn't ask for anything. They see that a person is completely foolish, doing something silly, and try to intervene to help him. If a person hears and understands the warning or hint, then he can receive that help, stop in time, not do something harmful. But if he is completely deaf, this help may not reach him. If he wants to hang himself, the rope breaks once, the second time. It doesn't work again. But he persists, keeps trying, and on the third or tenth attempt, the spirits couldn't help, and he hangs himself.
What a nightmare! How crazy people can be!
Teresa said, lowering her eyes. Nevertheless, the support of the Keeper of Knowledge prevented his disciples from being discouraged, so the girl regained her courage after a moment to ask a new question.
Sometimes spirits give signs that something shouldn't be done, that you are going in the wrong direction. How do we distinguish when the spirits are giving a clue that you are going in the wrong direction, and when you should continue acting in the right direction and not give up?
If we see signs, it means something is wrong. Maybe we chose the wrong time or the wrong way to achieve our goal. We should then think about it, pray for guidance, so that another plan of action comes. Maybe something needs to be done differently.
The sage began to explain.
We need to reflect on the goal itself. Where did it come from? Perhaps it was imposed on us. For example, one infertile woman had been unsuccessfully treated for several years. Then she came to us. The mentor told her, "You are a happy person. Why do you need all this? On the contrary, God has blessed you with the absence of children, and now you can devote all your time to spiritual development. Why do you need to go through treatment? Do something. Rejoice. Dance. You are already blessed by God. Now you have a lot of time, tremendous energy, not spent on foolishness, and you can direct it towards spiritual development." The person did not understand this. She was influenced, thinking that everyone must have children. She believed that children were her goal. But in reality, she did not understand that this was instilled to her in advance. And she considered it her goal, running to doctors, going through various procedures. But then she found the school, found out that it was not her goal, that as it turns out, she did not need it, that God blessed her, and now she only needs to develop spiritually.
Oh yes, I have a similar story in my family.
Pamati, trembling with excitement, began to comb her hair again.
My sister has 5 children, and she and my parents constantly harass me with questions about why I don't have children. They don't want to calm down and leave me alone. They've even started cursing me, calling me selfish. I tell them, "What have you achieved by having children? You are like robots. You were programmed to reproduce, and you're doing it. Children grow up in poverty, poisoned from all sides. And they become angry. They degrade. But I want to grow spiritually, not ruin my life and the lives of others."
"Yes, Bhamati, the Lord has blessed you."
The sage smiled at her.
"And with his help, you have overcome the family egregore that hindered your development."
"And how did I not understand this before?"
the Indian woman said with a trembling voice.
"Master, who helps the female disciples who do not acquire helper spirits at the seminar and do not have objects of power? For many, colossal changes occur after the seminar, even if they do not ask for help and do not turn to the spirits. Is it the energy of the master or the spirit of the egregore?"
Jiyeon asked.
"If a person comes to the seminar and genuinely practices, he is connected to the knowledge he receives, and therefore to the egregore too. Then the spirit of the egregore can help him,"
replied the keeper of knowledge.
"We were also told that if we receive true knowledge but do not practice it, do not apply it in any way, it may close forever for a person. Is this really so?"
Ji Yan asked a second question.
"Yes, of course. People are told that they need to be conscious, but instead they forget about everything and engage in some foolishness,"
confirmed the sage.
"Later, when they are reminded, they may not perceive it the second time, because they have already buffered and think that they are conscious, that they are already aware. That is, they buffer themselves from knowledge and practice. Try not to think about it, not notice it, and a negative tendency develops in them. Even if they are told about this knowledge again, they already have a buffer. A negative tendency has developed towards this knowledge, and it moves away from them. Now they have to go through a lot of suffering to understand that they still need to be conscious, not sleeping in all actions and situations."
"Master, does the influence of spirits manifest in the help we receive from other people? Do spirits express themselves through a person, or do spirits lead us to a good person who is in a good state, waiting and willing to help?"
Teresa asked the next question.
"It can be both ways,"
explained the keeper of knowledge.
As I mentioned, if we approach both spirits and people with the right emotions, then both spirits and people will want to help us. Therefore, the correct approach is crucial for them to want to help us.
Master, am I correct in understanding that if you just ask but do nothing, spirits cannot help?
Sandra asked.
Sometimes you don't know what to do and end up doing nonsense. But if you try to do something, even something foolish and inappropriate, spirits turn it around, and something good comes out of it. So, are actions the most important?
Yes. You must take some action. Water doesn't flow under a lying stone,
confirmed the sage.
So we ask the spirits for guidance. Tune in and start doing. For example, imagine a person asking for a lot of money but doing nothing. Later they wonder why money isn't pouring in. They think that wealth should start falling on them from the sky. So they do nothing, just lie on the couch. But if they start taking some action, even something foolish and inappropriate, their spirits will start guiding them. If they seek guidance before each step and pray constantly, the spirits will continuously direct them and lead them on the right path to success.
Hearing these words, Sandra could barely hold back tears of joy. She felt a lightness in her soul. Inaction and uncertainty had been suffocating her in worldly life. But now, the master had pointed her in the right direction. She was happy to realize that, despite the difficulties, she was moving in the right direction, following the master's instructions and overcoming her weaknesses.
Master, can a spirit die? Spirits also go through their path. We have magical objects. When they disintegrate, they say there is a struggle on the subtle level, and ultimately the spirit may perish. Am I correct in understanding that spirits are not eternal?
Kamal asked.
Yes, a spirit can die. It has its allotted time, just like us,
nodded the Keeper of Knowledge.
But first of all, a phantom can die. When we build up energy in an object, a phantom is formed. And if it encounters an obstacle, the accumulated energy helps overcome it. But when the energy is depleted, the phantom disperses. Spirits are more enduring, but they too eventually die when their time is up. However, unlike phantoms, spirits reincarnate into other beings.
Master, today we understood that there are two ways to communicate with spirits. First, through strong emotions. That is, before asking for something, you need to cultivate the right emotional state.
Pamati joined the conversation.
Or there are some rituals. So rituals are like anchors for the necessary emotions? Have people who didn't know how to convey a request to the spirits anchored the path to them through the right emotional state experienced in the ritual? Putting some herb, wearing something inside out, and then emotions kick in. Can a correctly performed ritual awaken the necessary emotions?
First and foremost, there must be emotion. The ritual is secondary. If a person doesn't know the ritual, it's enough to turn to the spirits with strong emotions,
the sage explained. But if, for example, a person knows a ritual, then they must perform that ritual. Spirits see their thoughts and understand that they know the ritual but don't want to do it because they think it's foolish. For instance, if they wear clothes inside out, they fear someone might see them, start laughing, or say something offensive. That is, the person resists, thinks all sorts of nonsense. The ritual is essential if the person knows it. Just like customs and prohibitions that a person must not violate if they know them. And if they don't know the rituals, it's enough to simply turn to the spirits emotionally. And then the spirits will help them. Magical rituals have come from ancient times, from shamanism and magic, as people have been invoking spirits for hundreds of years. Each ritual has its specific meaning. So if a person performs it, they are showing the spirits that they sincerely ask for their help. When a person performs a certain ritual, It helps them attune. So if a person knows the ritual or knows the prohibitions, such as not spitting into the water or urinating into the fire, one must adhere to them. If they don't follow them, the spirits see and can become angry, then punish such a fool. The knowledge conveyed by the sage to his disciples, repeated again and again in a new context, formed a complete picture in the minds of those gathered. Everything was in its place. Nothing was lost, and nothing was superfluous. The conversation came to an end, and the inspired disciples, one after another, conveyed their love and gratitude to the keeper of knowledge on an emotional level, without words. The sun, leaning towards the horizon, painted the mountain surrounding the clearing with a gentle crimson hue. In the distance, the waterfall continued its descent down the slope, and the carved faces of the saints in the rocks looked upon the gathered as if expecting to see them among the angels someday.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.